Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
I found something under a frozen lake that was only visible through the lens of a video camera. The discovery probably saved my life.
How's it going out there, Super Sleuth?
James shouted as I re-entered the cabin.
Capture some new footage for me to review? Any new phantoms?
Bacon sizzled under his half-sarcastic remark like a round of applause from a tiny, invisible audience. I forced the door closed against a powerful gust of cold wind. Breakfast smelt divine. Magnetized by the heavenly scent, I wandered into the kitchen without taking off my boots, leaving a trail of fresh snow across the floor.
Nope. Same sequence of events at the same time of day, 4 days in a row.
I don't get it, I really don't. I replied, dragging a chair out from the glass-topped table and plopping myself down, feeling a little defeated.
Thanks again for letting me use your camera, honey. Being out of work is making me a little stir-crazy. This has been a good time killer, even if it's driving me up a frickin' wall.
James chuckled. Then he turned around, walking over to the table, and sat down opposite to me. I slid his handheld video camera across the glass. At the same time, he slid a hot plate of bacon and eggs towards me, food and technology nearly colliding as they passed each other. His lips curled into a wry, playful smile. Clearly, my fiancé garnered a bit of sarcastic enjoyment out of seeing me so wound up. He thought it was cute. I, on the other hand, didn't find his reaction to my frustration cute. Even if I was unnecessarily exasperated over the lake and its puzzle, I didn't think it would kill him to meet me emotionally halfway and share in my frustration. He could spare the empathy. I gave him a side eye as I thrusted some scrambled eggs into my mouth. James saw my dismay and recalibrated.
Look, Kaya, I know what you found out there isn't as cut and dry as developing code, but wasn't that the point of taking a leave of absence? To give yourself some space out in the real world? Develop other passions? Self-realize? That job is making you miserable. It's gonna be there when you're ready to go back, too. Just, I don't know, enjoy the mystery. Stop looking at it like it's a problem that needs to be fixed. There is no deadline, sweetheart. None that I'm aware of, at least.
He chuckled again, and my expression softened. I felt my cheeks flush from embarrassment. James was right. This phenomenon I accidentally discovered under the frozen surface of Lusa's Tear, a lake 2 minutes away by foot, was an unprecedented paranormal marvel. It wasn't some rebellious line of code that was refusing to bend to my will. I could stand to bask in the ambiguity of it all, accepting the possibility that I may never have a satisfying answer to the woman in the lake and her faceless killer. I met his gaze, and a sigh billowed from my lips.
Hey, you're right. Sorry for being so crotchety.
James winked, and that forced a grin out of me. Briefly, we focused on breakfast, enjoying the inherent serenity of his cabin, tucked away from town at the edge of the northern wilderness. The quiet was undeniably nice, though I couldn't help but shatter it. You have to admit it's weird when I can't find any records of a woman hanging herself, I proclaimed. I mean, we know she didn't hang herself. It looks like the killer lifts her into a noose on the records, but there's no recorded deaths by hanging anywhere near Lusa's tear. Sure, the library's records only go back so far, and if the death was ruled a suicide, there might not even be records to find. I guess the murder could be really old, too. Or murderers. Could be more than one. James interrupted, mouth full of partially chewed egg, fragments spilling out as he spoke. I tilted my head, perplexed. What makes you say that? He spun an empty fork in small circles over his chest as he finished chewing, like he was doing an impression of a loaded spinner on a slow computer. Well, I think you're getting too fixated on your initial impression. Might be worth taking an honest look at your assumptions, you know? Maybe it's more than one murder. Maybe it's not related to the lake. If you're not finding anything, maybe you should expand your search perimeters. I rocked back in my chair and considered his theory, letting breakfast settle as I thought. Yeah, I guess. That would be one hell of a coincidence, though. The lake is named Lusa's Tear, and it just happened to have some unrelated spectral woman being killed under the ice, reenacting at 9 a.m. sharp every day? What are the odds? He turned his head and peered out the kitchen window, beaming with a wistful smirk. Maybe you're right. Those are some crazy odds. That all occurred the morning of Sunday, April the 6th. By the following afternoon, for better or worse, I would have some answers. James and I met 5 months before we moved out to that cabin together. The whirlwind romance, dating to engaged in less than 100 days, was completely unlike me. My life until that point had been algorithmic and protocolized. Everything by the book. James was the opposite. Impulsive to a fault. That's what I think I found so attractive about him. You see, I've always despised messiness, both physical and emotional, and I'd grown to assume order and predictability were the only tools to ward it off. James broke my understanding of that rule. Despite his devil-may-care approach to life, he wasn't messy. He made spontaneity look elegant, a handsome ball of controlled chaos. It was likely just the illusion of control upheld by his unflappable charisma, but at the time, his buoyancy seemed almost supernatural. So when he popped the question, I said yes. To hell with doing things by the book. One thing led to another. Before long, I found myself moving out of the city, putting my life on hold to follow James and his career into the frigid countryside. A few mornings after we arrived at the cabin, I discovered what I assumed was the spirit of a murdered woman under the ice. James headed off to work around 7. Naturally, I had already finished unpacking while he had barely started. Without heaps of code to attend to, I was painfully restless. I needed a task. So I took a crack at my soon-to-be husband's boxes. I convinced myself it was the wifely thing to do. If I'm being honest, though, I wasn't too preoccupied with being a picturesque homemaker. It was more that the clutter was giving me chest pains. I was about a quarter of the way through his belongings when I found a vintage video camera at the bottom of one box. A handheld black Samsung camcorder straight out of the late 90s. Time had weathered it terribly. Its chassis was littered with scratches and small dents. The poor thing looked like it had taken a handful of spins in a blender. To my pleased surprise, though, it still worked. Honestly, I don't know exactly what about the camera was so entrancing. I could record a video at 10 times the quality using my smartphone. And yet, the analog technology inspired me. I smiled, swiveling the camcorder around so my eyes could drink it in from every angle. Then, like it always does, the demands of reality came crashing back. Still had a lot of boxes to deal with. I shrugged, letting my smile gradually deflate like a happy birthday balloon 3 days after the party ended.
Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Was about to store it in our bedroom closet when I felt something foreign flicker in my chest, a tiny spark of excitement. The landscape outside the cabin was breathtaking and worthy of being recorded. Messing around with a camcorder sounded like fun. Of course, my automatic reaction was to suppress the frivolous idea, starve that spark of oxygen until it suffocated. It was an impulse waste of time. And there was plenty more boxes to unpack. Thankfully, I suppressed my natural urge. Why not let that spark bloom a little? I thought. That's what James would do, right? An hour later, I find myself at the edge of Lusa's Tear, pointing the camcorder at its frozen surface with a shaking hand, terror swelling within my gut. With a naked eye, there was nothing to see. Just a small body of water shaped like a teardrop. But through the video camera, the ice seemed to tell an entirely different story. I tried to explain what I recorded to James when he arrived home that evening, but my words were tripping and stumbling over each other as they exited my mouth like a group of drunken teenagers at Mardi Gras. Eventually, I just showed him the recording. His reaction caught me off guard. As he watched the playback on the camcorder's tiny flip screen, the color drained from his face. His eyes widened and his lips trembled. Not to say it was an unreasonable reaction. The footage was shocking. But before that moment, I had never seen his cool-headed exterior crack. I had never seen James experience fear. It started with two human-shaped smudges materializing on the surface of the lake in the bottom right-hand corner of the frame. I was standing about 10 feet from the lake's edge, surveying the landscape when it caught my attention. Someone's under the ice, my brain screamed. I let the still recording camera fall to my side and I ran over to help them. About 10 seconds pass, which is about the time it took for me to come to terms with the fact that I could only see said trapped people with the lens of the camera. Then I tilted the camera back up to get the phantoms in full view. Even though the water was still, the silhouettes were hazy and wobbly, similar to the way a person's reflection ripples in a river the second after throwing a stone in. There was a woman slung over a man's shoulder. She struggled against him, but the efforts appeared weak. He transported her across the ice through some unseen space. Once they're in position, he pulls her vertical and slips her neck into a noose. You can't see the noose itself, but its presence is amplified by the way she clawed helplessly at her throat and the slight pendulous swinging of her body once she became limp. Then the silhouettes dissolved. They silently swelled, expanding and diluting over the water like a drop of blood in the ocean until they were gone completely. When it was over, James looked different. Over the runtime, his fear had dissipated, similar to the blurry figures that had been painted on the surface of Lucis Tear in the video. Instead, he was grinning, and his eyes were red and glassy, like he might cry. "Oh my God, Kaya, that's amazing," he whispered, his voice raw, his tone crackling with emotion. That should be enough backstory to explain what happened yesterday. It was about a week and a half after I first recorded the macabre scene taking place at Lucis Tear every morning. There hadn't been any significant developments in my amateur investigation, other than determining that the phenomena seemed to only occur at 9 o'clock, which involved me missing the reenactment for a few days until I referenced the timestamp on the original recording. Other than that, though, I found myself no closer to unearthing any secrets. I was in the kitchen getting ready to head over to the lake. James had already left, but he had forgotten his laptop on the table, same as he had the past Thursday and Friday. He said that he needed it for work, but had somehow left the damn thing behind 3 days in a row. When I checked the camcorder to ensure it was operational, I found the side screen's battery was blinking red and empty, which was baffling because it had been charging in the living room for an hour prior. Originally, I was astounded by the stroke of bad luck. But now, I know it wasn't actually bad luck, and I couldn't be more grateful. That camcorder's newly comprised battery was the closest thing to divine intervention I think I had ever experienced in my lifetime. I rushed over to the sink, plugging the camcorder into an outlet aside the toaster oven, hoping I could siphon enough charge to power the device before I missed my opportunity to record the phantoms. Minutes passed as I stared at the battery icon, but it didn't blink past red. At 8:57, I pocketed the device and started pacing out the door towards the lake, but the machine went black about 30 seconds later. A massive, frustrated gasp spilled from my lips, and I felt myself giving up. I'll try again tomorrow, I guess. Nothing's been changing from day to day anyways. No big loss. I trudged back over to the outlet near the sink, moving the charger to the lower of the two outlets and plugging the camcorder back in. I held it in my hands as it powered on again. When the side screen lit up, I immediately saw something that caught my eye. There was a subtle flash of movement in the periphery, where a few pots and pans were being left to soak, half submerged in sudsy water. My heart began to race, ricocheting violently against the inside of my chest. Cold sweat dripped down my temples. My mind flew into overtime, attempting to digest the implications of what I was witnessing. I ripped the camcorder from the wall and sprinted to the upstairs bathroom, not sure if I even wanted to reproduce what I just saw. Insanity seemed preferable to the alternative. But as the bathtub filled with water, there they were again. She had just finished struggling. He was watching her swing. Before the camcorder powered off, I pulled it away from the bathtub and saw the same thing in the mirror too. You could witness the phantoms in any reflection apparently, which meant James was right. There wasn't anything special about Lucis Tear. The common denominator was the camera. His camera. Honestly, as much as the notion makes my skin crawl, I think he wanted me to find out. Why else would he leave his laptop out so conspicuously? I know computers better than I know people. He must have been aware I could find them hidden in his hard drive once I knew where to look, no matter how encrypted. James looked so young in the recordings. God, and the woman looked so sick, gaunt, colorless, almost skeletal. Every video was the same. At first, there would be just a noose, alone in what appeared to be an unfinished basement. The room had rough concrete walls, as well as a single window positioned where the ceiling met the wall in the background. Without fail, natural light would be spilling through the glass. Whatever this ritual was, it was important to James that it started at 9 a.m. sharp. Then, he'd lumber into the frame, a woman slung over his shoulder, on his way to deliver them to the ominous knot. I don't feel compelled to reiterate the rest, other than what he was doing. He wasn't watching them like I thought. No, James was loudly weeping through closed eyes while they died, kissing a framed photo and pleading for forgiveness, mumbling the same thing over and over again until the victim mercifully stilled.
Lilith, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Lilith.
It's hard to see the woman in the photo, but from what I could tell, they kinda looked like James. A mother, sister, or daughter, maybe? What's worse, the woman in the picture bore a resemblance to his victims as well as me. 16 snuff films, all nearly identical. Assumably each one was filmed with that camcorder too. But the only proof I have to substantiate the claim is the recordings I captured at Lusa's Tear. Only watched half of one before I sprinted out of the cabin, speeding away in my sedan without a second thought, laptop and camcorder in tow. I don't have any definitive answers, obviously, but it seems to me that James unintentionally imprinted his axe onto the camera itself like some kind of curse. My theory is that, through a combination of perfect repetition and unmitigated horror, he accidentally etched the scene onto the lens. Over time, it became an outline he traced over and reinforced with each additional victim until it became perceptible. And I suppose I was the first to stumble upon it, because it seemed like he had never noticed the imprint before. That said, I don't have an explanation as to why it only appeared over reflective surfaces. I mean, there's a certain poetry to that fact, but the world doesn't organize itself for the sake of poetry alone. Not to my understanding, at least. But maybe it's high time I reconsider my understanding of the universe, and where I'd like myself to fit within it. I just got off the phone with the lead detective on the case. James hasn't returned to the cabin yet, but the police are staking it out. The manhunt is intensifying by the minute as well. Have any of you ever heard of the Gulf Coast Hangman? Apparently, coastal Florida was terrorized by a still uncaught serial killer in the late 90s, and their MO earned them that moniker. Women would go missing, only to reappear strung up in the Everglades months later. They had been starved before they were hung, withering till they were only skin and bone. As I'm typing this, the killer has been inactive for nearly 2 decades. The last discovered victim attributed to the Hangman was found in early 2005. As it turns out, James never accepted a position at the local water refinery. When the police called, management had never heard of anyone that goes by his full name. God knows what he had been doing from 7 to 5. To my absolute horror, the lead detective believes he may have been potentially starving a new victim nearby, since a 31-year-old woman was reported missing 3 days after we arrived at the cabin. I'm staying with my parents until I feel safe, 200 miles away from where the Hangman and I first met. Although the physical distance from him is helping, I find it impossible to escape him in my mind, for the time being at least. Why did he let me live? Was his plan to eventually starve and hang me as well? Does he want to be caught? If there are any big updates, including the answers to those nagging questions, I'll be sure to post them. Kaya. Don't van life alone. I didn't choose the van life. The van life chose me. Something I said often as it was the outro to all my YouTube videos. I've been living in my van for roughly 8 months, and I'm done after this. The day was like any other day. I woke up and started my boring, antisocial life I loved so much. I edited a few videos, ate some leftover meatloaf, and played some video games. You know, the basics. I parked the van on the side of a campground up near the Colorado Rockies. It was getting late, and I wanted to use what sunlight I had left to set up camp. The snow was pretty low at that point, probably from a snowfall a few days prior. I got out my fire pit and got a little fire going. I was the only vehicle at the car lot, but I guess that didn't seem weird because it was in the middle of nowhere. As the night grew near, I received a warning on my radio about a blizzard that was due to hit in the next hour. I put my things away and got into my van, bracing for the blizzard. I wasn't too worried, as I had a propane heater inside the van in case it got cold. The blizzard hit, and it hit hard. The wind rocking my van, snow covering the windows and sealing me inside the van. I panicked a little, I'll be honest. The thought of freezing to death flooded my thoughts. I remember laying in bed with my blankets wrapped around me and dozing off. At some point, it got real quiet. So quiet, it woke me up. I figured the wind had died down and had finally settled, so I sat up. I wondered if I should go assess the situation and see how bad it was. I'd say it went on for about 3 hours, so it got pretty deep. I decided to make some coffee and warm up before I went out. I started to get dressed and put on my boots. Just as I put up my boot, a noise catches my attention. What sounded like something trotting through deep snow is making its way towards my van. Heavy footsteps approach from what I figure was about 30 yards away. I didn't move a muscle. Even my breath slowed down to basically nothing. My body was riddled with goosebumps as fear pulsed through me. My first thought was moose, but then there's also bears out there. I couldn't see anything through the thick snow lining my windows. The footsteps were about 10 yards away at this point, still making their way towards me. My body begins to shake violently. I'm not sure if it's from the cold or the fear, but I couldn't stop. I could hear what sounded like humming coming from the direction of the noises. It was very low and didn't really sound like anything I knew. It was getting closer and closer. The humming and footsteps were about 5 yards away now, and I was almost certain this was no moose or bear. The footsteps stop right outside the rear of my van. The only windows I have are the front seat windows, so I can't see anything out of the rear. A voice breaks the silence, cold and small.
"Hello in there. May I have a word with you?"
It said in a voice from what sounded like a little girl. I almost melted into the ground at that point. My body was absolutely trembling, sweat pouring out from all over my body. terror doesn't describe the feeling I had at that moment in time. I remained silent, refusing to utter even a breath. Now I really knew it wasn't an animal. First of all, that walking sounded way too heavy to be a little girl. It's almost 1 a.m., right after a bad blizzard, and it's out in the middle of nowhere? No weapon or anything really to defend myself with. I felt absolutely helpless.
"Don't be afraid. I'm not going to hurt you. I just need help,"
it said.
"Please, do not ignore me. It's very rude,"
it said in a slightly deeper tone.
"Yeah, what?"
I spit out, not being able to talk from the terror I was in.
"Is there a problem?"
it asked. I slowly picked my head up and looked at the back of the van. I gulped, took in a deep breath, and forced out what little I could say.
"What's the problem?"
I said through chattering teeth.
"Not a problem. I just wanted to ask if you had a tooth for me,"
it said. "A tooth?" I thought to myself.
"You need a tooth?"
I asked the voice.
"Yes, just a tooth,"
it said happily. My mind was in a million different places at this point. Who the hell was I talking to? What do they want with a tooth? Was this some sort of monster you hear about in some Travel Channel show? I wasn't really sure what it was, but I was afraid nonetheless. I began to reason with myself. Maybe another car pulled up and I didn't realize it, and they wanted to play a prank on me because they recognized the van.
"I don't have a tooth. Can you please go away? This isn't funny," I said.
The sweet voice that asked so kindly for a tooth moments ago changed almost immediately into a twisted, dark, deep voice like some kind of demon.
"Give me one of your teeth willingly, or I will rip the teeth from your skull one by one,"
it yelled. I began to search through my van for a weapon, something I could fight this thing with if I had to. All I had was a hammer that was stashed under the engine hood in the front seat. I raised the hood and grabbed the hammer. I stood in the van, hammer in hand like some dollar store Thor. I turned around, and that's when I remembered the shark tooth hanging from my visor. I ripped the tooth from the visor and went to the back of the van.
"I have a tooth for you,"
I said, body still shaking uncontrollably from the adrenaline.
"Throw it out now,"
it yelled again so loudly it shook the van. I slid the van door open, only to be met with a wall of snow. I stuffed the tooth into the snow and slid the door closed and locked it. A loud bang on the back doors and a loud scratch following all the way from the back to the side door and stopped.
"Thanks for the tooth,"
it said back in the little sweet voice from before. The humming began again, and the loud, heavy footsteps made their way away from my van. I curled up in a fetal position on the ground of the van until I couldn't hear the footsteps anymore. I jumped up and turned the engine over and began to let it heat up. I sat for about 15 minutes, then I began the drive back home for my last day as a van life YouTuber. I'm still not sure what to chalk it up to, but I don't see myself going around the Rockies ever again.